And
I got it working. I plugged into the wrong way on the back.
Okay, so it's 3 o'clock, October 10th. This is the meeting of the Infrastructure Task Force. In attendance is myself, Councilmember David Allen, and how about just everyone going around the table?
Sure. Chris Ringstein.
Derek Topos.
Peggy Hawker.
Yes.
Mark McCollum.
Tia Cavender.
Tim Gross.
Patricia Patrick.
Bob Gazer.
Ralph Busby.
And how about folks in the audience? Just
Bill Flute.
Carla Perry.
Ellen Christ.
Nyla Jemison. All right. Well, we got
community development director. Mark McConnell's our fire mayor.
We've got a few folks in the audience. We'll have public comment towards the end if anyone wants to provide that. In the meantime, let's just go forward and has everyone had a chance to look at the minutes / transcript of the September 19th, 2013 meeting?
Yeah.
I didn't see any.
We approve the minutes.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing no opposed, motion carries. Minutes are approved. Okay, we're going to move right into our next agenda item. And Tia, you're here to give us an update on grants and loans and the work your group has been doing on behalf of the city.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me here today. We're excited to talk about really what we've been doing over the past year and what kind of projects are coming up, so you can factor that into to the work that you guys are doing. So obviously I know you guys formed this committee specifically for to look at and to consider alternative sources of funding to take care of the aging infrastructure. So that's what brought us here to begin with. We've been working with Tim initially. We started probably a year and a half ago talking to each other through one of the consulting groups, HDR, and then determined that there was a significant opportunity here. So over the past year, we've been working on we have a general services contract where we are conducting grant research for all the capital improvement projects within the Public Works Department, as well as keeping a lookout for other departments. We're also doing strategic grants planning, so really focusing on what pulling together an inventory of grant opportunities that are relevant to the work that you're planning here in Newport, and then figuring out not only what are the top prospects of those, but also in which order should we pursue them, how can we optimize the opportunities, and how can we leverage your existing resources to be able to obtain alternative sources of funding. So that's a lot of the work that we do on a monthly basis, and really providing on-call consulting services for those needs. We've also been providing technical assistance for the specific grants that we're identifying, and I'll talk about a few of those. But that's really the nitty-gritty. Not a lot of people assume that grant writing is what we do. Actually, not much of it is the grant writing. We help, we use the narrative content from the engineers in terms of what they're planning on doing for capital and infrastructure projects. We really do the nitty-gritty, meet with the program officers, bring the program officers out here to engage and build relationships and cultivate those relationships to grease the wheels, as I call it, as well as be able to figure out how we can maneuvering the process and figuring out how we can get the biggest bang for your buck and the most money possible through these grant mechanisms. So that's what the technical assistance portion is about.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
Your question now.
Could you estimate for us about a dollar figure that you've been able to leverage for us so far?
Well, I'm going to talk about that throughout the rest here.
Okay.
So one of the first things that we've built is created a grant database specific to Newport. This is just a snapshot. We use a software system. This isn't yours specifically. That's why there's some Colorado grants. But it's just
How's that?
That's good.
Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
That's better.
Yeah. Maybe focus.
I thought that,
like
I thought that was
really
my glasses.
Really blurry.
I thought that was me.
You needed cataract surgery.
Jeez.
All right. You don't have to look in, and it was just, it's a visual, so I didn't have to fill it with text. But basically, you guys have now, the city of Newport has a subset of our overall grant database that really helps captures and provides information on the grant opportunities for that the city can go for. We include information like agency name, program name, the dollar amount that you can request, or the maximum grant amount, as well as eligibility criteria. So no matter what happens, you guys have that database and can use that database for other purposes. It's something that we maintain and we're constantly keeping an eye on. So now that we have that database established and we have those resources available to the city, we can put together some specific prospect reports that outline which grant opportunities are available. So, for example, after we had the last visit where we saw we went to the water tower, then we went to the grant database, pulled out all those in that database that had grants specific to that type of project, and then we can evaluate those opportunities to really really look at and hone in and make sure that just because those grant opportunities seem like a good fit doesn't mean that they always are. So we just continue to scratch the surface and so that we can hone in on the prospects that you do have a good chance of getting and could yield funding. We don't just, sorry, it's cutting off some of that, so that's
a... Yeah, I don't know why it's cutting a left hand of the screen.
I don't know what it is, too. Okay.
Maybe it's the
lid on
the computer.
No, I'm not quite sure what's going on with it.
Oh, well, that's an L, leveraging.
Yeah. It's displaying sign, but that's too hard.
Okay. Yes. Well, I'm halfway through anyway. So we have not only been helping with identifying grant opportunities, but also identifying other like low interest loan opportunities. So, for instance, that Clean Water State Revolving Fund program is something that the city had considered several years ago, and actually had gone through the process of starting to see if they could qualify. But at that time, the low interest loans weren't lower than the commercial loans that were available. And so, at the time, it doesn't seem like it was a very viable prospect for the city. There's been some changes to the program, and so we were able to help the city identify not only that we could go after those funds for a very low interest loan, specifically 0.89%. Interest, but also we were able to maneuver the system and really figure out how we could phase the project overall so that your entire wastewater system improvement project, this one in particular for the Agate Beach, was a $10 million project. We were able to help figure out how to put that all into this one application for the SRF program. And now as we're going through that process, you'll be able to use the government's money to pay for 5 years worth of that phasing and that project for free, zero interest for that 5 years. You don't have to start paying back the loan until a year, up to a year after the project is completed. So for 5 years, you get the free monies to be able to construct the project, and then you're in year six. Then you can start paying back that loan at a 0.89% interest rate. If the city chooses or decides that they want to take a longer period of time to pay back a 10-year loan instead, then the interest rate goes up a little bit, but only to 1.3% interest. So again, this is a good opportunity where it's not a grant, but it's enabling you to leverage your existing resources and the $1 million per year that was allocated for that particular project. It allows you to get that project done all at once and not have to pay for it for 5 years.
One question. Does interest accrue during the first 5 years?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's free, so it's free monies up for that.
For that title.
No penalty, no. And another example of how we've used a similar model was here for the Baymore project. I think it was, I don't know, maybe 9 months ago when we were talking about what are some of the priority projects, and the traffic analysis study, or the traffic impact study, had just been done for the Teven Brothers logging operations. And so Tim had asked me, is there any money we could get for the road to redo some of that road? And as soon as he said roads, I groaned and said, oh, there's just really not much out there for roads and bridges, and that's kind of hard to fund. However, we started talking about what's underneath that road, and that's the storm sewer improvements that were planned. I don't know when you guys were planning on doing them further out, but our strategy was, well, wait a second, if we're gonna do the pipes underneath, the road will be an eligible expense because you have to replace that road. And so we were able to make a case to the funding agency, had them come out here and work through that process to, again, help maximize what opportunity it initially didn't even exist there. So that's also going to be a 0.89% annual percentage rate, same model where you don't have to start paying it back for a year, and it gets done, things done a little bit earlier than originally intended.
Another question?
Yes.
That disaster that you described down by the Embarcadero, is it in the zone?
Yes.
All right, so in September, we were able to got final approval to secure the very first loan. So this is the first free monies, and it was a $216,000 grant from the Oregon Infrastructure Finance Authority. This was actually a direct result of a meeting that that we had months ago, maybe. Yeah,
it was around this table eating lunch.
Exactly.
That had happened.
And we invited numerous funding agencies to come out and sites, or take a look at some of the different sites, get them engaged and interested in some of the projects here, and then also were able to start asking really specific questions about some of the grant, or one of the grant programs in particular that we had known about while the program officer was here, and she helped us with that process, and so this actually resulted in 25% of the Big Creek Road landslide project that was originally required for the city to pay with their own capital budget. Now the city is getting all of that money, all of it paid for, 75% through FEMA and 25% through the Oregon Infrastructure Finance Authority. So this actually, we were able to secure secure this grant within 12 months of when we first started, or about 12 months within we first started, and you've already received a 200% return on investment within that 12 months. For the task three and for the technical assistance services that we provided for the two loans, the Clean Water State Revolving Loan Fund, that actually is a bit harder to track, but we estimate, a conservative estimate, is that will yield 400% return on investment in about 6 months.
And there's another project that will be eligible for that type of grant in the near future, right, Tim?
Yes.
And what would be the amount that hopefully we'll get for that as part of the 25% match that we'd have to fund towards the FEMA?
I'm trying to remember exactly the total project cost. I think we estimated the project at about $340,000, 75% of which would be FEMA funded, and in theory, 25% would be eligible for IFA funding.
What project is that?
The sinkhole storm sewer failure at 7 Tyler Street, right by your house.
So I think the most notable success for this particular one is that this was in your capital budget. It is now, or the $216,000, it is now entirely covered by a grant. So now that frees up that money to do something, to pay for something else that is much needed. Right now, that's cut off again. The Oregon Water Resources Department has a grant program, the Water Conservation Reuse and Storage Grant, and this is one that we're targeting right now. I came out specifically to meet with the program officer in Salem. The work that Tim's been doing with HGR and with I believe you guys met Keith, or some of you met Keith Mills, the state dam engineer. Mm-hmm. He is on the review committee, and so he had recommended that HDR do a presentation at the OWRD Dam Safety Conference this year, and so he was very familiar with it through Tim and came out, and so we're very well positioned to be successful with this grant. We're asking for the largest dollar amount. They've only awarded three grants ever for this amount, but given that the dams are a high priority in the state, I feel good about our odds. Even if they don't have as much as we're asking for, then they can come back and say they'll provide a lesser amount.
This is for the contract then that's already in place for the...
Yeah.
So they don't have
a portion thereof. So we can't be reimbursed for money we've already spent, but there's some initial geotechnical work that we're doing, and then they will take that geotechnical work and continue their analysis, and so it's that kind of that last second half of the work that this would fund.
Mm-hmm. And that's really that reminds me to mention the timing of all of this is very tricky. Mm-hmm. Knowing that you've already started that, we knew that there were certain pieces of it that didn't fit within when we find out about the award, and so that's really a lot of what we do is really just figure out how to make the case for support, how to package it so that the funding agency sees, you know, will still all those things will still be eligible, and that the timing will fit so that you can optimize the opportunity. So that's one that we're working on right now. That's due November 1st. So so we will find out about that one by February, and could have the funds. The funds would be available as soon as April or May at the latest. So that is
that's
speedy for government. It is. It really is. And that's even considering that, because we're asking for more than normally these grants. I mean, they range from $3,000 to $250,000. Normally they're on the lower side, but because it's over $150,000, they'll have to go to another level of approval, and that even extends it a little bit longer.
Well, and Mark, I think made an excellent point that the grant application process is a very long process. We spoke with the Department of Environmental Quality today about their 319 process. And we've spoken with them, David Waltz, about some specific water quality projects that we want to do here in Newport to deal with the fecal issues down in Nye Beach. And I think the projects are very eligible for funding through that program. But if we applied this fall, the soonest we would have a contract in place and be able to draw on funds is sometime at the end of next year. So it's a very, very, very slow and long and drawn-out process, and it is really based a lot on relationships that we develop over the course of a number of years. You know, Keith Mills and I have been working on the dam issue since we started working on the water treatment facility, and now he happens to be one of the people on the selection committee for that Oregon Water Resource Grant. And so, you know, it comes around, goes around. Those relationships that we develop with these program officers over the course of time comes back to pay down the road. And so it seems like when you have a consultant like Chase Park Grants, it's difficult to see results within the first year. The fact that we did have some good results in the first year was a bonus. I really didn't expect to see us start seeing this pay off for a couple of years, if not three, just because of the way this process works. And so I thought that was an important point to make.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And in fact, we have data to show that really 12 months is very rare. Usually it's 18 before we can even start to see or yield any type of return on investment. However, I will say that Tim's approach and his method and being able to actually implement what we're finding has really made a big difference. So you deserve the credit for that, in my opinion, Tim. So non-point source pollution reduction grant right now is another one that we're targeting. So we did meet with David Waltz from the Department of Environmental Quality. We started working with him and talking with him back in November and created what we call a pursuit plan. Once we know which one grant that we want to go after, then we create a pursuit plan to really help advance that relationship and get us closer to where we want to go. Last November, we had a conversation with him and knew that anything that we wanted to do here might not necessarily be in their priorities. And so kind of planted the seeds that maybe they could extend their priorities to capture. The more they learned about some of the projects, then they could see that those could be identified as a priority. And in fact, they did a couple of weeks ago change the priorities of the entire grant program so that it could include the smoke testing project that Tim had been planning, and we had told him about during that same site visit. So that again is one more example of how really that careful strategic planning now can end up resulting in successes in the future. So this particular project is that he thinks would be most competitive will hopefully help yield about $50,000 worth of implementation funds to help take what you've learned during or for the smoke testing assessment that you're doing right now and actually make changes to improve that non-point source problem.
Hmm. Are you all done with the actual smoke testing?
Yeah, the smoke testing program is kind of a three-phased approach. There's the actual smoke testing part of it itself, which just gives you a very large idea where you have issues. And then part two of that same contract is to go in with some dye and some televising and get a little bit more specific about where those problems are, and then we can develop the plan for repairing them. So we kind of finished the smoke testing phase one, and we're rolling into the second piece of it now.
And you're using the GP rooms for that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, so I just want to spend a moment saying, yes.
Using the GP money?
There's a Jeep, what they call the GP franchise money.
I get that.
Yeah, and the way that particular franchise fee is established is that the council each year has to determine how to use it.
I thought it was supposed to be dedicated to try and study what was going on with the effort.
So the first few years, the money, that's undergone the analysis, and we actually have a report that's being finalized. Subsequent to that, the resolution also indicated that after those first few years in which the money would be dedicated towards the GP analysis, it could be utilized for some of the analyses
for environmental projects,
right.
Projects for the purpose of eliminating pollution is how it's defined within the resolution.
Right.
And still focusing on my beach.
Right.
Right now.
Yeah, Mark, you were.
My creek coming across the beach. And
so, yeah.
So the report is out about the GP.
It's posted on the city website.
It's a preliminary report. I'm wondering if the final. I mean, I'm surprised you're spending money on other stuff when we're doing the final.
Well, the final report is near completion, and the scientists are taking a final look at it. So it's on the website now.
Thank you. So I just wanted to spend a moment of time to say again, one of the goals of the strategic grants planning process is for us to evaluate all the projects and the opportunities and figure out where they intersect. So one of the ways that it's normally done is that you have a project, it's not funded, you don't have funding in your CIP, and then so you go out and try to find a grant program that fits with that particular project. Well, it's great when you do that and you can find a grant program that's exactly it, then the timing is right and it's ready to go In rare cases that can happen. What we do instead is really evaluate the opportunities, evaluate the projects, and then figure out of the capital improvement projects what are the most fundable based on what grant opportunities are available at that time. And so it's a much different approach to fundraising or grant seeking, but one that I think will work very well with for the city. And so there's a couple of what I call fundable features that we're really, again, focusing on because there are grant opportunities for that. It'll free up then the monies that you had allocated for those specific projects, even if there is already a money or a funding source for that. So water quality is a big one. I'll be talking about one project in a moment. Also the Fish and Wildlife Protection, knowing that the dam restoration is one of your biggest priorities, for example. We know that there are some grants out there that care about fish and wildlife protection, and that there's some synergies there. I also think there's opportunities with corporate sponsorship. I'll speak a bit about that. Energy efficiency, what we're trying, I know you're doing some, you have some SCADA master plan or to be able to do some of those improvements, and that's also an area that we're focusing in on because it aligns well with grant opportunities. And then also some stormwater management. We've had a lot of success with those types of grants in the past. So these are some of the fundable features that we've identified thus far.
Can I interject for just a moment? So the packets might be good. Energy efficiency, as an example, we've met with Bonneville Power and Central Indian PUD to talk about their energy smart programs as it applies to our biggest energy users, which are lift stations in public works. And part of the Aiken Beach wastewater improvements that we're working on, Big Creek Pump Station has some pretty big darn pumps associated with that pump station. As an example, the influent pump station used with, we have 3 200 horsepower motors in the influent pump station. It only works intermittently, and we had $10,000 worth of electric bills in that pump station last year. The Big Creek pump station will have 3 250 horsepower motors in it. So I'll give you an idea about what kind of power usage we have with these big pump stations. We met with Bonneville Power and Central Lincoln PUD to talk about their Energy Smart program, and it sounds like we may be eligible for the Big Creek Pump Station to put intermittent pumps within the pump station for energy savings. The pump station is designed for a build-out life cycle, and what I mean by that is in 20 years from now, we're going to have this much wastewater flow going to that pump station, so that's how big the pipes and things are. But I don't need that big of a pump right now, and so by downsizing those pumps to smaller size, with the intention of replacing them sometime in the future, we become eligible for their program, and they'll help us pay for some of those motors. So that's how those Energy Smart programs work. Is it's not funding a huge project, it's funding portions of your project by saving energy by doing unique and energy efficient things. So.
There's also the Water Smart program as well, as a big, through the Bureau of Reclamation is another one that we're looking at specific for that. The project that I wanted to bring up as an example of how those fundable features will help result in funding is the concept of the bioretention installation of the at the Sanmore Park and Parkway. So the potential for installing a constructed wetland that not only helps manage the stormwater coming down, but then also help clean the water, and it also provides an opportunity to compare your baseline data for the readings that you have on Nye Beach and show the performance of those bioretention or vegetative technologies and those benefits. So it's something that we've been talking about for a while with 319, and is a strategy that we're considering moving forward with. That will help you not only tap into some of the more standard types of grant opportunities, but also those that are interested in research and evaluation and empirically testing the use of those technologies in a coastal community. So something that could benefit in multiple ways.
Where the skate park is.
So that's the
Sanmore Creek comes down. That's the creek that comes down next to the trail where the skate park is. That's Sanmore Creek. That comes together with Nye Creek underneath Coast Street. And so the combination of the two creeks is what brings all that water down to the Nye Beach outfall. And so we are looking at a stormwater improvement on the Sanmore Creek side because we have some space there to provide both rate control to prevent the local flooding down there and also water quality to try and deal with some of the fecal effluent that's coming out in the Nye Beach.
That's where the places we toured over the summer.
Yeah.
It's the ball fields and then across under Nye down through
that. It's that trail that goes down across from the ball fields.
By the fire station.
Oh, okay.
And that creek was underneath nine, and there's that pathway past the skate park, blah, blah, blah.
You can track it through different areas of town, see it kind of surface. And
It comes up again behind the Presbyterian Church.
Underground water flow.
So one of the strategies that we're considering for that particular project, as well as other capital improvements, specifically in parks, is a sponsorship program. Most people know about sponsorships in terms of events and functions or venues. But we actually had some success in other communities considering named spaces and taking actual parks or park amenity areas and viewing platforms, etc., and then appealing to corporate sponsors, and those specifically that have foundations as well as formal corporate giving programs, to provide in exchange for their donation, then they get them the recognition, they get acknowledged and have a legacy. A legacy project that helps benefit the community. So this is one we've started, at least just kind of putting together kind of a package of what it would look like, how to engage and how to inform those corporations.
Which corporations would you be looking at? Generally speaking,
we're gonna paint the ladder truck like the Oscar Mayer wiener.
Okay. Well, I guess.
That was Tim's idea, not mine.
I get the picture now. You don't have to go. You answered my question.
So, David,
are there wildlife components to these parks? I think about Ducks Unlimited and Penguin. Would there be groups like that that would be interested in
nature conservancy?
Yes, exactly.
We met yesterday with the Soil and Water Conservation District, the Watershed Council, and the Surf Riders to talk about the Sanmore Park Water Quality Improvement Project, because we don't want to just go out and do another capital improvement. We want to get stakeholder engagement on that project, because not only is it providing a functional need in the city, it's also providing an educational need in the city. And it's one of those type of capital improvements that requires long-term maintenance to function appropriately. And without engagement of organizations like that that have the manpower and the understanding and the knowledge to be able to manage something like that, I do not have the guys who can go and maintain a rainwater garden, frankly. And so you need to have private-public partnerships to be able to do that. I would agree with you. When you start talking about a developed wetland, there's naturally a wildlife component to that. And so some other organizations may also be interested in being involved in that process. And that's really, we're kind of at the very ground zero with that. We're engaging with people right now. We're throwing some ideas around. We talked to the landscape architect about potential renderings. And we'll probably develop that over the next year to start taking a look at how we may be able to fund an improvement like that.
And those, another benefit of having those partnerships and establishing those is the city can then become what I call a switch hitter, meaning that you can apply for grants that are specific for cities, municipalities that you're eligible for. But then there's also another pool of private funders that only provide grants to nonprofit organizations. So partnering with those organizations, then they can be the primary applicant, but the funds can all still go to paying for the capital expenses. So we're working with Surf Riders Foundation and talking about a Meyer Memorial Trust grant for $300,000 to potentially help pay for some of this, the bioretention installation. So this is just an example of what we've been working on. We just, to answer your question, David, we haven't got to that point yet where we've identified. We've started collecting a list of potential corporate prospects, but once we move into a scope specific to this, then we'll get more nitty-gritty in that. And so same thing. Here's a rendering in progress about what that area could potentially.
So the fire chief doesn't have to start worrying yet.
No, okay. Not yet. All right. Wait till 2015.
Right. So we do have a really important fire station needs to be replaced.
I'm working on that.
Okay.
working on it.
I did have a question.
Yes.
So you're looking, when you say corporate, you're looking from outside this area. We have very limited corporate right here.
Sure,
so
yes.
So when you say corporate, you're looking at nationwide?
Well, when possible, like Walmart Foundation, for example. But in terms of the local corporations here, then we'll do research to see if they do have formal corporate giving programs at the national level. So again, it's a little bit too early to tell because we haven't proceeded with that. A lot of banks do, yes, as well.
That's right.
And again, they're interested. It's those that are interested. If you think about companies that want recognition and want the exposure of the tourists coming through the area, then there's some potential there. So we're going to continue to explore that and see how that works out. So that is really my presentation that gives you an update about where we've been, what we're doing now, and I'd be glad to answer any further questions that you might have.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have one. The governor set up the regional solutions teams a couple years ago. How tied in are you in everybody's regional solutions teams? Are you familiar with that at all?
Mm-mm.
So is there anybody attending the regional solutions teams? I know Don Mann is on the regional solutions teams out of Eugene.
I've had recent conversations with our DLCD rep, Patrick Mingard, who's looking into that, and part of this is they're dropping the ball on their end and not really engaging our area and being focused on some other areas, Chilean County and stuff like that.
But when they first set those up, I attended those meetings up in Lincoln City, up in Tillamook, and actually that's where we first got the connection to the band guy, Mills guy. From a couple of years back, and they're really available. I mean, it sounds like at this point the city's really ready to go to the regional solutions team and sit with all those people around that. It's key agency people, and even go further with saying to those folks, what monies do you have? Where are you coming from? And they may be referring you to the same thing, but it's a totally different kind of. It's supposed to cut through the bureaucracy. So I think it's something that we really need to tie back into, definitely, from the city level.
Especially if we have a compelling project. I mean, that's what they're looking for. Is there something that's a regionally significant project? And if that's the case, then they're prepared to muster all
that's
resources.
A good idea.
And the dams and the water source, dedicating the land around the water source, all those things that we talked about in the last couple of years, I think that's a huge thing. And then the other one would be water quality, wastewater quality coming down through the town out on the beach.
That's good.
Those are both areas that are really, and I think the regional solutions team is really useful.
So you've been corresponding with them, or how can I get more information about that?
I'll go to the governor's office would probably be the point contact, mm-hmm. and they can send you to the regional representative for this area.
Okay.
And Don Mann is... I think it's still on that committee, maybe so.
That'd be easiest.
Yeah.
So to you.
Phil, did you?
And then I did.
No, well, Phil. Oh, you missed it. Tia, have you looked at any grant opportunities for fire stations, public safety, emergency operations centers, or focus more on the public works team?
We do have data on those types of programs in the database. We've produced reports specifically for the water tower, but the more I know about your programs or your capital needs, that might, you know, I'm working intimately with Tim on the public infrastructure projects. But the more I know about some of those, then it's very easy for us to produce a report specifically for those your particular needs.
When we established the basic services with Jay Park grants. The intention was that we would be able to share our services across departments as needed. Obviously, because we started working, our focus had been on public works, but as time goes on and they begin to, you know, show their benefit, I mean, that was the way the contract was developed, is so that you can utilize our services as needed to pursue, I mean, a union.
Natalie, yes?
Yeah, my initial question, which is, do you have any estimate of the amount of dollars that you've brought into the city so far?
Yes, that was what I had talked about earlier, the $216,000 for...
That's the total?
Well, that was one of the grants. Oh, you're saying total combined?
Yes, exactly, yes.
Total combined.
Including loans.
So far with the, including
the loans
and the grant,
about... It'd be like $12 million.
Well, it just depends on how you look at it. It's harder because the loans are different because we've leveraged that.
I count them.
Yeah, so, you know... Yeah. And the thing to consider about the SRF loans that we're talking about is we don't necessarily intend to take $10 million worth of loans. What it does is it gives us an opportunity to find alternative funding sources to pay for those improvements while we have the ability to put the improvements in the ground, because
sure,
we can't wait.
Yeah. Sure.
And so,
low-interest loans, no pay.
You know, I don't have the expertise or the time to pursue these funding sources, and so that's what she's been helping us with. So over those SRF loans, one's about $10 million, one's about $1.5 million, so there's $11.5 million. And then we secured a $216,000 grant from IFA to date. I fully expect that we will be able to acquire the other IFA loan as well, which would be somewhere in the range of, you know, $75,000. Mm-hmm. And so that's just where we're at.
50 for the 319.
Right now. Mm-hmm. And so we actively are working on some additional programs as we speak. And hopefully in 6 months we'll have different information and better results.
Right.
And then how much have we spent on this?
For a total of, for the year, about $115,000, I believe, including all tasks.
That's right.
Not including the one that
we have a general services task, and then what we do is when we go after a specific grant opportunity, we'll execute a specific task order for that. So, we pay for our general services contract out of what we call a capital project fund, where it's contributed from water and wastewater and other funding sources so that we can go after funds with the strategic grant funding program. When I go after a specific grant opportunity like Big Creek Road, that task order is actually charged against Big Creek Road. So the services that she provided out of for Big Creek Road are actually paid for out of the grant that she secured for that. And so that she kind of pays her own way when she acquires those, because they get charged back to those projects.
Right.
If those services are eligible under that grant. Sometimes they're not. In the case of both IFA and FEMA, I believe that they are. And EMI Consulting Services, I believe, are. And so we are actually making the first draw on those grants probably this coming week.
Right. Patricia, you were...
So this, I think this was handed out to us last week. Are you still following this? Here.
Following it,
the suggestions, the recommendations for next steps.
Well, what
did you not get that? I know I got it here.
This is the monthly report that you gave me last
right,
month.
Right, right. Yep. So that one is actually from August. So
well, yeah, it says September. Report date is September 6th. So this is October. So I mean, are we still following this recommendation for next steps?
Let me see which one of them, and I can answer that.
I don't have a current.
Oh,
so
yes, this is one that we were looking into further.
Okay.
Timing wise, it didn't fit with the Big Creek Dam, but it's still on our process.
So the Big Creek Dam, are you going after FEMA or was that the state?
Yes, that's
Oregon Water Resources Department.
Right now, this
Oregon
one is state funding.
Resources.
Right now, we are not targeting any federal funding.
Okay.
So you're safe from,
okay.
From that.
Okay, I was curious.
That, but there, we have a lengthy, this one is the very first of many that we're going to go after for the dam restoration project. That one pays for that would pay for things subsequent to the planning.
And when we pursue dollars, I'm really pretty militant about understanding what the cost of those dollars is. When we started the Agate Beach Wastewater Improvement Project, the city initially started pursuing USDA funding for that. That's a federally administered grant program, and both the environmental and grant coordination costs associated with acquiring that money made it not worth it, and we dropped the program when we were almost 90% of the way through the application process. We were able to resuscitate some of that preliminary engineering that we did on that and use that for the SRF application, which has a lot less strings attached to it. We better be getting a heck of a lot of money before I go after federal dollars again because of the costs associated with administering those programs.
Okay.
it's exorbitant. And, you know, the best example I can think is of the Bay Boulevard project. We spent more money than we got in the grant process.
Yeah.
Just simply to build the project in the fashion that the federal government mandated.
Right.
I think we ended up acquiring $250,000 or $300,000, and the project overran $350,000.
Hmm. Yeah.
And so you can't make those kind of decisions more than once.
Yeah. Any more questions for T? I know we've got a few more agenda items. Mm-hmm. We're going to go till 5 if necessary, but. Any more questions for Tia?
I have one more question, and that is there any rule of thumb to follow as we're planning on future resources? I'm talking about the potential out there for granting. Is there any rule of thumb to follow what you might expect in grants? I mean, we can say we have these costs and we're not going to apply for any grants at all, and we're going to cover those costs, or we're going to anticipate a certain amount or a certain level of granting to help fund these sources, and what should that be? Should it be 10% of costs, estimated costs? Should it be 20%? Or is that even possible to do?
It's really not. The way that I recommend communities handle this is really to tell me about all your projects and don't worry about whether or not they're funded, and to plan far enough ahead of time so that we can say, I can tell Tim, you know, in this group of projects, these types of projects, you can count on some six-figure grants, knowing that once those are secured, then the funds that were allocated for that particular project can cost shift and open that up, like what happened with the big
or low interest loans.
Right.
Both
right.
Grants are.
Tim, did you use her input when you did the budget this year?
Virtually.
So
because if you take
that's
a look at
in
the
there,
if you look at the CIP, it reflects the funding that we've already acquired.
Right. I knew that, but I
never project though that we will acquire something ever.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to use a rule of thumb, the more money you bring to the table, the more money you're going to get. And Derek knows that exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the way we go about it is we have priorities and projects that need to be completed because of the need basis. Fire protection, failing infrastructure, whatever the case may be. And we do the best we can to fund those projects internally, hoping for the best. And if we can fund those through a different format, then that allows us to either do another project that we need to do sooner or supplement funding for a different project that same year. And that's what we did with Big Creek Road. We had Southeast Moore Drive in the CIP predicated on acquiring an SRF loan, which we don't yet have. The design process would be started by SDC money that we're going to acquire from Thiebon Brothers, which we also do not have. And yet the infrastructure is falling in the ground, literally falling in the ground. And so it was penciled into the CIP, hoping that we would be able to acquire funding for that. When we acquired the grant on Big Creek Road, it allowed us to use the money that we had previously dedicated for Big Creek Road to then start the design on Southeast Moore Drive and move the project up. Because without even the design, I wouldn't be able to acquire the SRF funding. So you have to fund it to a level to be able to do the preliminary engineering that's necessary to even acquire the loan in the first place. It helps me to stage and sequence projects that way. And I think that what you're going to find over the course of time is you're going to be flopping dollars like that. You know, you fund a project as needed because of need, and the ones that actually have great need from an environmental perspective or a water perspective can sometimes be funded. And then we shift it, those priorities elsewhere. And, you know, it's going to be a touch-and-go thing. Every year, we will adjust accordingly.
Although there isn't a percentage or that, I can tell you right now that we'll never go after a grant application that I don't really think you're going to get. I think you're going to get this one. And so that's part of it, is that we will not, it's the assessment process and the evaluation that will be important, as well as I can say that I'm confident that each year you'll be getting six figures in grants if we do this right. The more money you invest, the more money that you'll end up yielding with this. It is one of it's very different. It can be a revenue generating service. So that's And then it doesn't exactly give you what you wanted.
Are there grants and projects that were linked to amend the budget for 2013-14?
Not at the time. They were already incorporated into this.
Yeah, we put a fair amount of work in picking that stuff up front, Bob. We've got a number of projects that are well underway that are grant funded.
The only one that may end up impacting it, like you mentioned, is this one. I would expect that the award and what we would actually be able to leverage those dollars is going to be fiscal year 15 anyway.
See, that's the actual advantage of the longer time frame, is you actually have the ability to incorporate it into your budget because of just how long it takes to bring those funds online and actually to a point where they can expand.
So, Tim, that dam study was 350, is that right?
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark.
And so this grant is for 250. Have you guys already approved that? It's already in the works.
Yeah, the CIP has already been approved.
And so how much has been?
We haven't been any yet. In fact, I don't even have the scope of work yet because they're still trying to. TIA's working with HDR to kind of sort this out so that we can establish the timing on the project so that we can fund as much of it as we can using this because we do have a really good likelihood of acquiring these dollars. So. The geotechnical work, which we have to do, will likely fund up front, and then it will allow us to go and use those dollars to complete the rest of that analysis.
So that's your limit, right? That's all you
that's
can
That's the
for.
Most we can ask okay. for. Now, again, here's where the art of it comes in, is being smart about the 350 that you guys have. We do have to provide 50% match. So we play the game of, well, how big do we need to make our budget? Do we need to go into maybe the next phase? Because the 350 would mean if we could only ask for 175, but we know that we actually could be competitive for 250. So that's, you know, that's the game of the grant seeking.
Okay, so that's basically, 250 is the 50% portion that represents 50% of the project.
Well, it's more like we can ask for up to 250 of their money.
250 that the city matches.
Yeah, we put in 125,000.
So if we, in this case, it's 500. So if we can make the budget, if we can go far enough into the other subsequent phases that you know you're going to be doing, but they aren't necessarily in that original scope.
You present a $750,000 budget to these folks in order to get 250.
Right now, our budget's only 350.
This is just for the feasibility work we're doing on. I mean, it's going to be much more than that over the course of, say, 10 years.
But you don't know what that other part is yet.
But
we don't specifically, but we can forecast what that will be to a level that I think we can do the application. This is where it gets hairy, and we were talking about this, is we have to be ambiguous enough because we don't know specifics, but we do know generally how the process is going to work. And I think we know generally enough to be able to make a successful application.
That was great. You're going to stick around through the rest of the meeting?
I
you want more question mark? Okay, we want to.
Well, no, it's just a comment, and that is that I think it's really great that you've started to pursue this process even further than we had in the past, and that I guess the council will have to discuss some kind of a process or some kind of a policy to follow. So when grants do come in and they offset an item that you've already budgeted, a line item that you've already budgeted, who makes that decision that $215,000 gets moved to some other place, and how does that happen? And if you raise the water rates and sewer rates, which everybody's concerned about, to pay for that, and you get this extra $215,000 you weren't planning for, do you offset the water rates?
Thank you.
And how do you deal with those extra dollars that suddenly land on your lap? And I think the council needs to have some kind of a policy about how that will happen.
I'm not saying that
it has to be every last little piece and part of it, but I'm just saying that there has to be some kind of a communication there between council and staff about where the money is and where it's going.
I will, real quick. That was the whole reason for setting up this task force, is to get that kind of process going. So, because of the rate increase initially, we wanted to try and offset it with these kind of things.
Right? David, I have a question for Tia. So,
I'm sorry,
Eric was going to say
something. I would just, having been involved in about some $4.5 million of grant money that's come in, since I've been here, none of that is paying to reimburse us. So right. This is kind of, I just want to caution, this is kind of the anomaly
right.
where we're going after, in this case, Tim's going after grant funds to help pay for the back end of something that's already been budgeted. All of the ones that I've been involved in, you know, we're budgeting our match in anticipation of getting that grant. But so we're not in a position where we get this windfall.
No, I just
want to be real clear about that.
But the discussion we had a year and a half or 2 years ago when we raised the water rates and went into this new cycle of water rate increases and funding was that there was to be an avid pursuit of grants and extra monies that could possibly offset or stop the increases from happening. And that's what we see happening now, which is really, really great. So somewhere that line has to get drawn.
Yeah.
Hold on a sec. Let's just kind of keep this. Patricia, you are next.
Okay, so after this 250, let's say you get this grant. Okay, you get the money. And let's say the report comes back that you've got $1.5 or $2 million worth of work that needs to be done to the dam. Is there like a segue grant or a tandem grant that is maybe available to the city for the repairs?
The restoration?
Whatever comes up. I don't know what's going to be in the report.
What we're doing is, again, we've compiled grant opportunities that we know of right now that could potentially help pay for some of those. Now, this grant program in particular, you can go after again next year for other...
But not for a study, but for the repairs and stuff.
Right. So for the implementation of it, that is, of course, our goal. And so what we're doing now is setting the stage and doing it carefully so that we can be more competitive when we're going after the restoration funds or the implementation funds to pay for those repairs based on the successes that we have had.
So my next question is, it looks like you've been doing this and you do this for other municipalities, mm-hmm. correct? Have you ever had a situation like this where you had a study and then it came out where it was just a huge amount that needed to be taken care of and you assisted that municipality in obtaining further grants to take care of it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's our model.
No, I know the model,
but not for this particular a dam restoration project.
Okay. Yeah.
But no, I have many examples of how this strategic grants planning has helped other communities. The city of Cheyenne, in particular, in the first 2 years, we helped them raise $8.6 million of a $15 million project. We have many other examples of that, but not for dam restoration.
Okay.
Now, did you have a question?
I did. Piggyback on what
and that will
Mark
be the last
had
question
to say, I'd like to make sure that if you were able to get this kind of money, that didn't end up going off, you know, the fact that your budget is improved didn't end up paying for other disrelated stuff that wasn't infrastructure related.
Tim, did you? I guess.
I think I need to address Mark and her comment because the IFA money that we just recently acquired is very, very unusual in the fact that it was a very quick turnaround. Mm-hmm. You know, we mentioned earlier that generally the process of acquiring grants is a multi-year process. And so if the city pursues this particular grant opportunity and acquires it, as I mentioned to Bob, it very likely wouldn't be incorporated into the fiscal year 14 budget, 15 budget, next fiscal year, which it would be incorporated into the CIP at that time. It almost never happens that I have money left over and flop it to another project within the CIP. And even then, we track within the CIP the funding sources that pay for those projects because you can't use any money for any other thing. For example, money that comes out of the Water Enterprise Fund pays for water projects only. And so the dam assessment at this point is being funded through the Water Enterprise Fund. And if we acquire this grant, that money stays within the Water Enterprise Fund and is used for another water project. We don't budget on a year basis for capital projects. I have a 5-year CIP. In fact, I actually have a 20-year water CIP. So we have projects prioritized over a number of years, knowing which ones are coming up and what order we need to do them in, so that when we have money that we don't necessarily spend in one fiscal year, we can utilize that money in the next fiscal year. And then we have discussions about what our revenues are for that coming fiscal year, that's taken into account at that time. It's really very, very rare that you all of a sudden win a grant within a fiscal year and you have this piece of money that you can use.
Yeah. Yeah.
The money that was used for Big Creek Road as a match was the Newport gas tax money. That's what that money was. And it can only be used for road improvements. And that's why it's being used for the design of Southeast Moore Drive.
I'm just concerned that the council not raise your funds for others.
So,
I just want to make one last
comment. Yeah, one last comment. We really need to move on to Bob. So, okay. But stick around in case people have other questions.
Okay, I just wanted to say that there is no way you guys would have gotten that $10 million loan had you not had those utility fees allocated.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, absolutely.
That you wouldn't have, because you wouldn't have the revenues earmarked to be able to pay back that loan, and therefore wouldn't have received
that's
that
loan. That's a good
point. So yeah, those utility fees allowed you to get a $10 million low interest rate.
I was going
to
make that same comment, that the rate increases over the last few years has really given Tim the opportunity to hire you and to really start to seek out matching dollars and grants that he wasn't going to be able to do otherwise. There weren't any extra funds to do
so
anything like that.
So, this fiscal year, as an example, you know, from looking out over the course of the next 20 years or so, the Water Enterprise and Wastewater Enterprise Fund really need about $1.5 million a year in the capital improvements to kind of keep pace. This year, the Wastewater Enterprise Fund contributed only $600,000 to capital projects. The Water Enterprise Fund contributed about $900,000. That's where we're at in that goal. And you know, that being said, if you didn't do any more rate increases, we're falling behind.
Okay.
Status quo. That's all I mean.
So, Tia, thanks for that presentation.
Absolutely.
And please stick around. We're going to have our next presentation is going to be Bob Gazewood, giving us an update and some comments on our bond rating, which recently was upgraded by Standard & Poor's. So, Bob, why don't you go for it? And
was there a new handout?
We might have some extra copies. If not, we can always get some for the
proposals.
Are there more copies, Bob? Great. Looks like we've got plenty here.
Presentation.
Does everyone have one?
Sure,
from the
you.
Hold on. Patricia, you have
this?
I got this.
Oh, you got one?
Is that what you're passing
out?
Yeah. There we go.
I think it's the same.
Okay, Bob.
All right. Okay. So this is given sort of a summary of the bond rating and three basic debt issues that were affected by the bond rating. And then I've attached four basic schedules, A1, B, C, and D with four parts to B, to kind of explain the basis of the AAA rating. Now, in terms of the city's bonds that are rated by Standard & Poor's, there's three types of bonds that were rated. The others are not, and I have the debt schedules that I can pass out at any time or even later. But the city had a 2009 LOCAP, League of Oregon Cities financing program grant. The outstanding debt as of June 30th, 2013 totals $1,767,653. And that debt service runs through 2018-19. Within that particular issue, it pledges the full faith and credit of the city's general fund, which means then that if there was any potential default of other city revenues that support the debt service on that fund, the fallback position is the general fund is mandated to pay that debt service. At the present time, that debt service is supported by the general fund, which represents approximately 46.9% of the debt payment, and this is on a yearly basis. The street fund picks up nearly 21%, the water fund 1.5% rounded, and wastewater just about 10.6%, and the line under grounding fund about 20%. So those are that's the makeup of that fund. Then I have a schedule later on that will give you a 5-year summary of what it doesn't extend out to the full length of the debt service payments, but I've got one that shows a 5-year commitment of what these various funds are, that city funds that support certain bond issues. Now, as I said, that's a full faith and credit. It's labeled a by Standard & Poor's as a general obligation bond. It only is such that it's pledging the full faith and credit of the city's general fund. Yeah. All right, these three funds that I'll be talking about was rated recently in a September letter from Standard & Poor's from A+ to a AA-. In 2009, there was a nearly $15.9 million GOB bond that was issued for the building of the water treatment plant. Now, this particular issue is a tax-supported property tax. It has special ad valorem tax attached to the ballot title. So it's a clear-cut issue that is supported by the property taxes. Now, in relation to this, this particular bond issue was rated triple A. Standard & Poor's gave the basic rating of A+. The city purchased a bond insurance policy through Assured Guarantee to upgrade that issue to a triple A. And I'll discuss the AAA rating later on. The total debt service at June 30th on this bond issue is slightly over $28.9 million, and a debt service runs into the 2029 fiscal year. The other issue that was rated A+ by Standard & Poor's is a full faith and credit refunding GOB bond series 2010 A and B. The B portion of this refunding issue is a South Beach Urban Renewal District bond. The A series is the bond that the city is responsible for. And it represents the refunding of some state loans. The city's portion is about $5.4 million. The Urban Renewal District is slightly under $7.9 million. The debt service runs to fiscal 2023. Now, in terms of this particular issue, the sewer fund payments represent 76.11%. The SDC, the sewer SDCs pick up 1.75% payment of the debt service, and a room tax is responsible for 22.14% of the debt service payments. All right, so that briefly summarizes those three issues that Standard & Poor's has carried a A+ rating back in 2009 and upgraded those three issues in September of this year to a AA-.
Question, are those percentage breakups of responsibility for payment on these fixed or can they be modified?
The The League of Oregon Cities issue clearly says that since that's a full faith and credit, also the language further goes and says that any available city monies can be provided to make the debt service payments. So it's not restricted as to those. The reason the percentages are there is because those particular funds had certain items that they purchased, and in relation to the total, then that percentage was determined to be allocated that way. So if a change was made, say that the general fund was going to pick up a portion of, say, the water, that means then the general fund is paying for a piece of equipment that that the water system purchased and used for
their
own
purpose. Part of that bond leverage was with the jet truck at the wastewater plant, yeah, which encompasses a portion of the wastewater enterprise fund.
Yeah. And then the others are clearly related to a water treatment distribution type system and or a wastewater type thing. Even though in terms of the refunding issue, the way it was structured at the time they wrote the loans with the state, the city had to pledge its general fund tax base to support for the collateral against that loan.
All right. I have a question for you, Bob, on the last paragraph on your first page there, your refunding series 2010A. Do you know which side of the room tax fund that 22.14% comes from?
I'm sorry?
Which side of the room tax fund?
It comes, that allocation comes directly from, is a straight allocation from the room tax to the debt service fund to pay that.
Which side of the room tax fund is it coming from? Well, the tourism side or the city side?
That would be the room side. The 46% side.
The tourism side?
The tourism side. Yeah. The it's a 54-46 split, and right, 46 is the room tax tourism side. And it comes from that, yes.
Now, AAA bond rating issue.
All right. The clarification of the AAA bond rating. When Moody's came out with the AA minus, there was an appearance that there was a downgrade in the city's bond rating from a AA. Now, just be assured that there never was a downgrade. And none exists now, and I don't anticipate in the future that will happen, and there's a specific reason for that. Okay, now, what's happened here is that the AAA rating is only affected on that 2009 issue that went to the voters for the water treatment plant, and the voters voted in the majority for doing the construction of the treatment plant, and attached a property tax levy commitment to pay off that debt service. Now, Standard & Poor's in 2009, and I have the attachment to this material under A2, that's where they, let's see, that's
A2 or page 2?
Attachment A, page 2. And it's, yeah, there it is, where I've got the 2 circled. That's the March 11th, 2009 Standard & Poor's rating, where they set the long-term rating for that issue as A+. Now, what happened here is that the in the process, the city wanted agreed with the underwriters to run this thing through as a AAA rating to get a better interest rate. So the city paid nearly $153,000 to purchase that bond insurance policy to give this bond a AAA rating. Now, since that was a purchased insurance policy to maintain, to have that rating, that stays in effect regardless of what Moody's does. I mean Standard & Poor's. Standard & Poor's in September upgraded this issue to AA-. Mm-hmm. That's their rating. But the bond rating, because it was insured, is AAA. Right.
So, Bob, if we paid $153,000 to get the insurance, will the payback on that in lower interest rates kind of equalize what we paid out,
Presumably, it should. Okay. Yes. Yes. In addition to that, the A plus rating that Standard and Poor's put on this issue back in 2009. They charge $9,375 for it. So you don't get those things free.
I'm sorry, Ralph.
I was just going to say, if we go out for, if the pool bond passes, is the chance that that'll be rated as AA-? That would be your best expectation.
It'll be rated AA- only if we ask for it to be AA. Well, Standard & Poor's might come back and do that, but we would have to ask Standard & Poor's to go in and rate that bond. And if we do, we're going to pay for it.
So can I ask a question? Can you just give an explanation on bond rating and the benefit of purchasing a better bond rating for people like me who...
It's like a credit score.
You know,
buying points. You're buying basically, you're buying points on a home loan.
Yeah, the thing is, the city isn't going to get anything better than what's got right now.
Yeah.
AA-.
Yeah.
And very likely, based upon what happened a few years back when the markets crashed and cities started defaulting and all this and that, and insurance companies went down the tube, they don't do AAA ratings anymore. They don't do AAA ratings in a way that you can't buy that insurance anymore. Because I asked our bond people just recently, and they said, no, the best you can get that's out there right now in insuring bonds is AA-. Well, we got AA- now, see. So we can't improve upon that.
So, Bob, when you're getting the AA-, let's say the full faith and credit bonds, which is tied directly to our budget, that's one issue. But the general obligation bonds are tied to the property tax values, and, you know, it's obviously, I think, a more secure basis.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that impact the bond rating? Is it pretty much AA-, regardless of whether it's a full faith and credit or a general obligation tied to the property tax?
Well, you're going to get a better rating if there's a property tax to support it. Right. So it's like the...
That's what I want.
Yeah, it's like the swimming pool issue that's coming to the voters this November. That's tied to an ad valorem tax. Right. So that in and of itself is going to... be rated better as far as cheaper interest rates. And in addition to that, the knowledge out there that the city has on these three issues, AA-, should also be a benefit to the city.
Okay.
In terms of getting a lower interest bid.
Okay, thanks.
So, Bob, this attachment A2 that we're on, mm-hmm. or that you were referring to, mm-hmm. I guess it's the next page or whatever.
Yeah.
There's some pretty glowing representations in there about our city. And do you feel pretty good about that? Is that accurate? Because there's one statement in here that says the city also has a minimum reserve target of 20% of expenditures. So I'm just wondering, are we meeting all of that?
Now, that's from 2009. There's a more recent one, I think, that we're...
Yeah, there's...
It's just the attachment A.
Yeah, I know. There's one, actually, I think.
The actual rating,
it was one that came out recently, Bob, right?
Yeah, that and that's part that that's in here part too, that's part of the agenda.
Yeah. Okay,
that right. Particular okay. Is one of the attachments in the agenda material, which shows that September report, ratings report, and it does make comments attachment. In there about this. The stable economy in Newport, stable management. It makes reference to the policy the city has on the general fund in terms of the unappropriated fund balance. Those are just some of the issues that it talks about. It recognizes potential decreases in the fund balance in the general fund on a short-term basis. That's what the new rating does.
Yeah.
But overall, they felt confident enough in the city to raise the rate up to the AA minus.
Yeah. Page the September 20th, 2013 rating report summary.
That's what it looks like.
It's just the next page.
Yeah, it's near the end.
And it's on the second page. That's the most recent.
What, you just hand that or one though?
What's in the agenda?
It's in this agenda.
It's actually in the handout that's in the back counter over there. It has a rationale
there it is.
Itemization.
Okay.
And that's the most recent one that we have on the books. It was last month, actually.
So. Yeah. So you want to look for the one that's dated
September 20th.
September 20th.
And the second page.
2013.
It says, this rating reflects our assessment of the following factors for the city. It has about 6 bullet points.
So this one doesn't reference anything about targeting expenses or 20% or anything.
Anyways.
Okay.
I mean, Bob, you had, I know that you mentioned at some other meeting, you referenced that. I'm not sure, was there anything else you wanted to add to that?
In terms of that, I don't think so, because I think we covered all points. I just wanted to make sure that you understand that to get those issues, the AAA only affected that one issue, doesn't affect anything else. And just want to just reaffirm
that
there never was a downgrade. Okay.
I'm glad you clarified that because I was not clear why it had occurred like that, but that's definitely good.
What's the difference between an interest rate between the AA minus and the A+? I mean, I know it varies.
It could probably be 50 to 100 basis points, 0.51. Hmm. Yeah. Over the life of it, I'm not sure, but because the further you go out, the higher the rates. They try to get their money back in terms of the interest rates. So.
Does this have an effect? Do the bond ratings have an effect on revenue bonds as well?
Yeah. Probably not, because the revenue bonds. Don't carry any full faith and credit behind them.
They're a little higher,
and their rates are always generally higher than you're going to get on a GLD type.
Right.
Yeah. And they're just supported by
rates.
Yeah. But the
fees,
the tax increment for urban renewal for indebtedness actually would be similar to what we're talking about here, correct, Bob? Like with the full faith and credit or the property tax.
Yeah.
So that would be a more secure.
If you're doing an urban renewal bond.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would be a little more secure than.
It's a GO bond, basically.
Yeah. But it's coming from that source of revenue. So.
Yeah. Well, it's coming from
the last time you asked for a debt schedule, so. I'll give you those debt schedules.
Bob, once again, I'm going to need more than just this meeting to absorb all your stuff, but I'm glad you. But that's good. It just means you go into a lot of depth. I'll just put it that way.
Well, and, thank you for that.
You do.
I appreciate it.
All right.
That's why I have to go home and read through it about 5 times.
Okay. Okay.
When you ask for it, he gets it to the end. So, I don't know. Anything you want to highlight on this stuff, Bob? I know Derek and Tim, and you actually have a really important agenda item that we want to get through. So,
yeah.
Anything you want to highlight before you get into more of the
generally that represents all the current debt, the schedule I just passed out, all the current debt of the city, with the yearly debt service amounts, and it also has the three issues that are affecting the South Beach Urban Renewal District. This schedule with the yellow highlights that I passed out is just covers a five-year period of what the debt service would be based on each fund. It does not include the two issues, the water treatment plant and the wastewater that are supported by the property tax levy. So that's not part of this schedule. But this gives you the dollar value that's committed for at least the next 5 years, but it goes on further than that even. One of the things that you probably need to be aware of in the future is the statute that governs the 3% of market value limitation on general obligation bonds are supported by property taxes. Based upon the city's 2012 market value rating, the computation is about 3% of the market value is $46 million. The city pretty much has that full $46 million available because most of all the debt of the city is excluded from that 3% limitation. What would not be excluded in the event it passes in November is the swimming pool, because that would be 100% city property tax measure.
So then now we can go out and borrow $46 million.
And the important thing to remember here is that the statute clearly says that water supply treatment or distribution, sanitary or storm sewer collection or treatment, and off-street motor vehicle parking facilities are exempt from the 3%. So
you good to know.
You could do something there without worrying about the city's 3% limitation.
Well, good information, Bob. Any final questions for Bob? He's moving into the next agenda item pretty soon here as well. Tim just stepped out. Bob, thanks. This is really helpful. I think right now what we're going to do is leave it up to you, Tim, and Derek. At the last task force meeting, we asked the three of you, and primarily Derek and Tim, to come back and just talk about some of the funding options that we had listed at our initial meeting. We had a long list. I don't have it up there today, but Derek, you were going to speak to certain issues and Tim was going to speak to others. So why don't you start off, since Tim stepped out of the room for the time being.
Yeah, I'll go ahead. This is the potential. This is everything that was on that list and a couple of additional things. So I'll just go ahead and pass that along.
Okay.
So everybody has it. And Bob, please feel free to chime in as you go along. I was just going to touch on each of these briefly with my observations and then let you just kind of think about it, and I'm sure Tim may have some as well. Budget efficiency and management, I think that was on the list. I wanted to hit that right off the bat. There are some areas that you might want to encourage the...
We can make some extra copies for folks. Is there just one left?
Well, there's several.
Is there? Okay, good. All right.
There are some areas where you may want to encourage the city council to dig more deeply or explore more deeply. My thought on the budget efficiency and management is that the efficiencies that we can achieve through general fund are basically going to be needed to be reallocated to address general fund expenses. I mean, we have a limit 3% annual increase in terms of what we can expect to come into the general fund. We have health insurance costs, we have employee costs, and things of that nature, which we are regularly struggling to deal with those increases in revenue. And so I do think there's an opportunity to seek efficiencies in a few of the areas we want to talk about briefly would be, for example, franchise fees. I don't believe, you know, at this juncture, given what I've observed, that we're really auditing those as well as we could, and I'm not sure we're actually realizing as much out of those existing franchises as we might. So it's something that we might want to dig into and look at a little bit more critically. Bob had mentioned the street lighting district. I think of that's more of a county level thing, but I think the point there is another area in terms of our existing budget that probably warrants some scrutiny is our utility expenses, getting a handle on our utility expenses. Are those costs appropriate? Are there opportunities for cost savings? That should be looked at very carefully because I suspect there are some significant cost savings that might be achieved there through just a careful look at what the city's spending and the full range of city expenditures on the street lighting side of things.
Well, a quick question to Tia maybe on that would be, there must be a lot of money out there for conversion to LED and low electrical use lighting.
You would think so, but not. And the programs that there are tend to be rebate programs. That you might not necessarily be eligible for. And we have data to support that. That's nationally, not just here at the state. Okay.
But we've been taking advantage of those programs already within our facilities management because, they're small types of things.
Yeah.
So when we replace the lights in the recreation center, we get rebates for using high-efficiency lighting in there.
Sure.
The wastewater department has been systematically changing out all of their yard lighting and lift station lighting to LEDs and taking advantage of those energy smart programs. But
they're small.
You get a discount on a fixture, you get a discount on a light. That's kind of how those things work.
But there aren't any big programs available.
You're right.
But you don't see those long-term savings either for a number of years. You start seeing it in your electric bills. But again, the lighting is this much of my overall energy costs.
I just remember looking at the bills paid and the bills, the number amount of dollars going out to the PUD every month is astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge.
So therefore, they are a corporate sponsor prospect.
Oh, yeah.
Eat them up. Let's see what happens.
Another area that's probably worth some discussion amongst the group is that policy of 20% of the unappropriated beginning fund balance being basically 20%.
And we should just change that beginning to ending because that's what it should be.
Be sure.
Unappropriated ending fund balance.
Unappropriated ending fund balance. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. The current city policy sets forth by 2016 20% of the revenues to be set aside in the unappropriated ending fund balance in the general fund. It also sets forth other operating funds to have a decent balance. And so, I don't know, one of the things that is a policy issue is to revisit that percentage, whether that percentage is really appropriate to tie up 20% of the general fund, because that's going to restrict usage of other areas if that percentage is held. But in any event, that's a policy question.
Okay, that's good. We'll note that.
That's still a one-time thing, though. Yeah. Once you get there, you got some investment.
Yeah,
but you got to get there.
Yeah, that's true.
With regards to utility rates and bonding, and there's a number of them listed here, and they've been discussed.
Right.
General obligation bonds, revenue bonds, full faith and credit or certificates of participation, LOCAP, IFA. These are all, there are a number of borrowing sources, but I think one of the things that you may want to think about or recommend is putting some additional thought to kind of at least, kind of like we do a capital improvement plan, but also what's our borrowing plan over the next 5, 10 years across the board, not just water and sewer, but urban renewal? What other, you know, property purchases, things of that nature, what are we looking at in terms of borrowing, and how does that line up? And then the other is, what is that sweet spot in terms of borrowing, say, against, you know, your water and sewer funds? You know, how much of that revenue that's coming in do you want to have or should be tied up in debt service as opposed to being available for operations? And I think there's some additional work that could be done there that might, you know, make some of this picture a little bit clearer for you.
Are there guidelines for that, Bob? I mean, different cities do it different ways, but somebody must have written down some guidelines at some point.
There might be something. It's worth researching to see if there is something on it.
It would be a policy. It's set at the council level.
Well, I mean,
you look at how much money is going out. How much money is going out to debt service right now this year?
What do other cities
use? $1 million.
I recall the city of Corvallis when we a few years ago started out. We were given a copy of a large policy on financial issues.
Their whole policy.
And I still have it buried somewhere. I'm going to pull that out because I think it did speak to some of those issues. This is just for Corvallis, but I think they had a pretty comprehensive policy in place.
That would be something that would be discussed through the master planning process and the wastewater.
I'll see if I can pick up a copy. Well. Yeah. It's in my file somewhere.
Yeah. The thing about some of those things in terms of that debt, water and sewer, some of that is equipment buys that were substantial costs. And so they were leveraged over a period of years to pay those off.
Local improvement.
But one of the biggest impacts is that Seal Rock, $866,000, and that runs forever, I think, almost.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to be able to get rid of that one.
Local improvement districts is another option that, you know, the city really hasn't pursued as aggressively as many jurisdictions do. We do have a number of areas where we have a large number of what we call non-remonstrance agreements or agreements where property owners are already committed to participating should district form. So that's an area we want to take a look at. On the negative side on that is, you know, certain one, you know, there are some pretty significant administrative costs on our end, which would largely be borne probably by Public Works in terms of just administering the LID process. And you could very well get pushback from property owners, even those who've already signed non-remonstrance agreements, not wanting to come up and pony up for those improvements. So, but that is a very viable means, particularly of, you know, resurfacing and improving streets and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, the LID also, the city really has to have the cash up front to pay for the project, and then they bill the property owners back for
it would end up being some sort of a bond or something you have to take.
15 years, right. But the cash has to be there to do the project to begin with before you can do an LID.
Well, again, it gets into some of these other sources too, but
yeah.
you can bond
borrow
for that.
Against that too, yeah.
You know, I'd like to actually touch on LID because I think people have the preconception that you're going to do a local improvement district, say in a neighborhood, to improve drainage and streets or something like that. But, you know, in past lifetime in other cities, we've done regional LIDs for large regional improvements. So, for example, the Agate Beach wastewater system is providing wastewater benefit for everybody north of essentially Walmart. You could form a local improvement district for the north end of Newport to help pay for those improvements because they're being directly benefited. That would be an example of paying for a large capital improvement like that. We did that with large street projects where you have major collector roads that are transmitting traffic to certain portions of your community. We broke them up and we plunked out five of them, and this part of town paid for that. You could pay for road improvement projects in that fashion because those local improvement districts and the costs associated with that per household become very, very small at that point.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point.
Is that an election process when you do that, or how do people participate?
You have to go through some public hearings,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know whether the city ordinance provides 60% or two-thirds, but that supermajority of property owners within that area have to approve that LID. If they don't, it doesn't go, no matter what the city's costs
are. I think it depends on who initiates it.
The number of changes depends on who initiates it. If the city initiates it, the amount of people who need to approve that is a different number.
Yeah, so it's laid out in our code provision.
It's laid out in the code provision.
Yeah. There's a big chapter on that.
But the residents initiated, I think it's actually a little bit easier. I think it's only 50%.
But if the city initiates it, it's a supermajority. Yeah. If the citizens do it, it's a lesser number.
And it's been, the LID has been tried now through the courts after Measure 61 or whichever one it was, that they thought at one point that what you were doing was using the tax base of the entire city to back those bonds. So if you have a default from anybody in the neighborhood, or a default from the whole neighborhood or whatever, mm-hmm. All the voters, all the taxpayers have to back it.
The cost is picked up again by the general fund.
Right, and so has that been vetted now? Are we starting to see a lot of LIDs happening in the state, or is it still kind of on a limited basis because of that?
I don't know. The only thing that I know, back in just before 1990, when that bill went through, Troutdale had something like 14 LID districts, and we just rammed those things through by September 30th, so we could get them all in before that legislation happened.
Became effective, yeah.
It became effective, and we just barely made it. And those were the last LIDs that were ever done in that city.
Urban renewal.
Yeah, let me touch on urban renewal and annexation. I'll do them both at the same time, because there's some relationship here. Urban renewal, a conversation for the formation of a new Northside district, at least what that concept might look like, is something that we're planning to start here in the next couple months anyway.
Okay.
But just a little thing on urban renewal. One, we're hit with a double limitation. It's a 25% limitation in two respects. One, we can have no more than 25% of the city's acreage in an urban renewal, under urban renewal at any given time, and no more than 25% of our assessed value. So if you look at South Beach, that South Beach eats up about half of the assessed value, a little bit more actually, 12.8% is tied up in the South Beach district. So we have more or less half that capacity in play on the north side. We have a more limiting aspect of it, though, is acreage. The acreage issue hits us, and we've got about 700 acres that we have available to us on the north side, as opposed to, I want to say, 1,100 or so that's tied up down in South Beach. Now, that gets impacted.
How much do we have available on the north side?
Just a little under 700 acres.
Okay.
Now, that's going to change, one, when the annexations of the water reservation go through, because that's 350 acres of land that we're thinking about bringing in. So that's going to change that ratio. And the other aspect of it is, this plays into that conversation that the council may want to have with respect to annexing those islands in South Beach, those unincorporated islands that the city surrounds and now has extended service to, those properties, at least down to 50th, because those count against us. It's in an odd way, because they're in the urban renewal district, but they're not in the city. So that, you know, that kind of penalizes us in our acreage. So if that acreage was added in, that again gives us additional capacity to go a little bit larger on the north side. So
it would be added to this South Beach Urban Renewal District.
Already in the South Beach Urban
Renewal District. It's already in the South Beach Urban Renewal District, but it's not the city.
It's not part of the evaluation that the city has. Yeah.
So we have to count it against us in terms of valuation, but we don't get the benefit of it in terms of city acreage. So it's kind of...
Derek, on the urban renewal, how do you envision that discussion starting with the council or the urban renewal agency, which is the council? I mean, how are we going to approach that?
I have budgeted funds to engage Eco Northwest to assist in developing probably two or three different concepts that could then be vetted with, I think my recommendation on that would be a task force or group of taxing entity representatives and maybe other interested parties. We want to keep that group manageable to vet those different concepts and see what their thought is. Those concepts would be both geographic maps, what the different boundaries of New Northside District might look like, but also maximum indebtedness, you know, what that relates to in terms of the hit to the different taxing entities, and very generally the scope of projects and the objectives of the districts, and of the district, excuse me, and that may vary based on the different concepts that are pitched.
I remember when we changed the South Beach, extended the timeline, and it changed the scope of projects. Patricia was chair of renewal, and Mark, you were on the council, and there was a fairly vigorous public process, from what I recall. And I know that there was a lot of stakeholders. That was like 5-6 years ago.
What's realistic, do you think, if you decided, I mean, if the council decided they wanted to take that recommendation and go with a new district? It's 3 years away.
That's long term.
And then you're not going to get any funding from it for another 10 years.
It's going to take time. But, you know, you got to start with kicking the concept out there, getting the taxing entities generally on board to make sure that you don't have the door slammed, in your face before, you know, get some general agreement then on a concept before you move it forward for the more robust public process and development of, you know, the specifics.
And it definitely would be something for long term. It wouldn't be a short term fix, so to speak. It would be more for the stability of the long term.
There's a certain amount of time before you can generate any funds with it.
Yeah,
there is. For urban renewal, it's on the infrastructure side. Yes, it can be used to fund certain, and has been historically by the city of Newport used to fund infrastructure work. But the primary objective of your urban renewal program should be increasing the overall assessed value and quality of life of your community, which they go hand in hand typically. And so whatever gets pitched, I think, or ultimately sticks, you know, from the other taxing entities, it's going to be, is this plan one that's going to generate significant additional tax revenue in the future so that it's worth having our base frozen for this period of time because we're going to receive that windfall down the road.
Right.
Well, you know,
I have a question.
Yeah, go on. No.
You mentioned something about the north. What part of town are you talking about?
North of the bridge.
Just north. There's
north. Of that bridge?
The Kilby Bridge.
Okay, so I'm back in the renewal district. All right.
So it's basically just... it's just basically there would be some geographical area within the north side of town. I mean, that still would be determined through a very vigorous public
process.
Right. And we would want to upgrade somehow.
Exactly.
Well, for infrastructure upgrades.
Upgrades. Yeah, so that's kind of the concept.
But it's a long-term process.
North of
Equinity
View, clear up to the movie
theater. Okay. Well, no. You shouldn't have that much land area in it.
Can't. No. That would be the area you would be looking at.
Oh, okay. And then you
investigating. And then you pick a smaller area.
It could be little connected alleyways. It could be Highway 101.
Right.
And then 20, and maybe whatever other main infrastructure.
So does that 25% have to touch each other?
No.
Yeah, 10 and 5. Okay.
But it all would need to be included in a common plan, so there would be a general common, a series of objectives.
And you have to have all the taxing districts, like the school district, the counties, they all have to sign off on it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah,
because they lose the increment.
Yeah.
The most likely area
of
focus, based on what work has been done to date, would be the U.S. 101 and U.S. 20 corridors to some degree, would be the ones that would be the most likely candidates.
Another, maybe the dam area, maybe. I mean, to me, it seems like there's other areas within the infrastructure we're talking about that you'd have to include in order to be able to work on some of those major issues.
The trick is providing the benefit to the taxing entities so that they buy off in that.
Right.
I think it would be a mistake to try and incorporate your dam structures into that because you're not gaining any additional tax revenue by doing anything to that.
The water's going to all those people, though. They're all using the water.
That's true, but it's not changing your tax base by the improvements that are associated.
That would be a topic of discussion if we ever get to that point.
The South Beach Urban Renewal District, as an example, you know, there are major water and wastewater infrastructure improvements that were done as part of that Urban Renewal District. And as a result, those properties are much more valuable for commercial development, and you'll see the benefit of that in a short amount of time. And when I say a short amount of time, I mean 10 or 15 years. You know, so that needs to be taken into consideration with an urban renewal district. You're renewing the urban landscape for the purposes of generating additional tax revenue. So you have to be selective in the types of projects that you use for that.
Right. So Derek, do you want to...
Yeah, real tax rates, I think it's been discussed that there may be some potential to seek increases in room tax rates. It's relevant to note that there are a number of things such as, you know, we were discussing the water and sewer costs to public restrooms down the bayfront, Nye Beach and elsewhere. Those are not being, those costs are not being incurred or paid for through room tax. They certainly would be eligible from the tourism side.
Some of them are being paid for. Some of them are from the tourism side.
I looked into that. They're not being covered. A lot of this stuff has been backed out. That's one of the things. Just like maintenance costs and stuff like that, it's been backed out as that fund has been constrained.
Yeah.
And now those costs are being borne again by general fund. Again, this is a way of, this, these are just pieces of the puzzle.
Yeah.
The real property assets.
But room taxes contribute to the general fund.
Yes, 40, it does.
46%.
54.
54%. The room tax right now contributes to the general fund and it's getting used for those services.
Yeah. It actually goes.
But on the other side is that the general fund is then pushing transfers back out
to the
greater than that, back to the Park and Rec, the airport, places like that.
Yeah.
Real property assets. I'm going to distribute this via email to the group and the city council. This is a complete inventory of the city's real property assets.
Oh, good.
About 6 pages, 11 by 17.
Wow. Is this different than what you passed out before, Derek, that had the highlighted?
Well, what I passed out before was a color map. This is the text description of what's on that map. Again, this has...
These three maps you passed out at a prior meeting.
Are these
posted on the...
Yes, they are.
Okay.
So what we can do is we can put this up there, but there's no...
These are on the webpage.
Yeah. Will this be on the webpage?
Yes.
Okay.
Everything passed out today that you have hard copies of will be posted on the website as well.
Because I really want to take a look at
we
this.
And your PowerPoint.
Data dump list.
Your PowerPoint. My
point on this one, you know, again, a lot of most of what the city has is tied up. It's either
we had to go a little late. Thanks for
strips of, you know, a lot of that's either tied up with existing city capital improvements. A lot of it's roads. A lot of what's on there is also property that's sloughed down towards the ocean in geologically unstable areas along, you know, the ocean front that the city's picked up because of that. Jump Off Joe, for example, there's a number of properties that used to be part of the Jump Off Joe development that the city now owns, but they're not developable. They're basically part of the beach landscape.
They're homeless camps.
So a lot of steep drainages, junk like that that's in there. What I am working on and will distribute as soon as it's done is a separate list of individual properties that are of consequence, they're on that list, but they're not as easy to just pick out. Larger properties, the limited number of commercial properties that we have that we could use to sell or... things of that nature. The thing with real estate, though, or real property assets, is it's one-time funds. Probably best used to purchase other real property or put into some sort of revolving loan program or something of that nature. They're not, you know, whatever we get from the sale of real property is probably not the best use of those funds to try to use that to offset general operating expenses.
Right.
Then I'm going to hit system development charges and exactions. We don't do as much, we do very little on the side of exactions, pretty much non-remonstrance agreements right now. What I mean by an exaction is, you know, the city can require, say somebody's doing an infill development, to fully develop their street frontage. Now, we don't typically do that, and the reason we don't do that on infill development is because when you have a full street segment that's not built to full standard, and you're talking one person who owns one lot, and saying you got to build it just for your lot, you know, it doesn't make a lot of sense in some respects. But getting some contribution from them towards future improvement of that street does make a lot of sense. The thing with SDCs and exactions is, what's that push point where it puts too much of a burden on the developer and then becomes a disincentive for development generally. Right. So that's a place to be careful with exactions and SDCs. They are a viable tool to help pay for a lot of this stuff or get it built to standard in the first place so we're not going back and retrofitting, which is a lot of what we do. Putting sidewalk in where a sidewalk was never required in the past, should have been required in the past, didn't happen, and now we're going back and retrofitting at a much higher cost than had it been done in the first place.
Okay. Derek, real quick, just because you jumped to on the real property assets, and you said you were going to compile a list of properties of consequence.
I've got two sets. I've got the vacant property piece done. That's about 31 properties at this point of vacant properties that are, you know, significant assets.
Right. So when you do that, will you be able to identify the property and the costs associated with it?
I don't need that email.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give it back to Derek.
That's what I have been doing. And a number of these, you know, a lot of these properties, too, have strings attached. They were purchased with specific funds, for example.
Right.
So there are some limitations on a number of these. But
that was my only question.
Grants, this has been talked about in detail, so I'm not going to spend much more on time on that other than, you know, we do try to align, you know, planned projects that we know we need to do that are a high priority with grant agency priorities that are out there. Because if our priorities align with theirs, then it's a good candidate for funding. To Patricia's point earlier about the dam and, you know, where this leads to multi-million dollar construction, my suspicion there is that there will be an opportunity for some work in Salem and that you may get something, you know, through the state legislature that allocates additional funds to Oregon Water Resources to start to deal with these as these studies come out and show just how significant this problem is statewide or even along the coast, if you know.
Because we got a bridge that's, you know, hitting the radar too. Right. So I just wonder how much Newport can extract, a bridge and a dam.
Right.
There's proposed,
we can always try,
new legislation that does provide a new revenue source for Oregon, specific to its water, the resources. So that's something we're going to keep on. No, at the state level. So that was recent legislation. So even though we don't know exactly how they're going to build their grant programs from that, it's something that we're keeping an eye on to be able to monitor that I'm hoping will help with the dam restoration.
I have spoken to folks at DEQ. There are those at DEQ who would be open to an accelerated closure of the Agate Beach landfill.
So we're talking the city dump?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so now
I'm going to caution that. I said there are staff at DEQ that are open to an accelerated closure. There are other staff that are going to take more convincing of that. But that might be something you want to pursue.
What does that actually mean?
It's a big chunk of money.
It's a big chunk of money that's tied up.
Sitting there.
That I know they've had a big budget.
It's $1 million, isn't it? That you have to $1 million.
That we have to hold. And the issue with DEQ is that, at least in the staff that I've been talking to, their view is, look, we don't have the staff at the state level to oversee all of these projects. This one fits in the basket where the discharges are not at a level that we're concerned about. This is a low-risk site in their mind. And so from that staffer's perspective, it was, this is a good candidate for us to accelerate the closure process on, which would then lift the requirement that we hold that reserve. Now, at the end of the day, the council may still want to hold some funds in reserve because that reserve is there, I think, in large part, if we have a slide or something and have to go in and clean up, those funds would be available. But, you know, there are other ways to generate those resources in the event of a slide. You can initiate taxing at that point.
What's the current timeline? Does this closure process require?
We're 17 years into a 30-year period.
Right.
Does this require any physical action to be done, or is this strictly administrative?
Yeah, there's a closure process that takes place, and I know that Wayne Belmont from the county is actively investigating what we can do to do that.
So that's a long term. That's not there with urban renewal. This isn't like we can put it up for sale and
sell
term,
it. No, we can't sell the landfill. In fact, we probably will.
No, what he's talking about.
The closure of it to relieve those funds, but I thought the state said you had to hold those for a certain period of time.
That's what we're trying But DEQ is, you know, at least there are some folks at DEQ that are open to talking about accelerating that process, and that could be, it'd probably take a few years to get it done.
Yeah, but we're talking 5 years instead of another, you know.
Right.
So it's long term.
Instead of another 13.
13, yeah.
Even then, you know, we'll be out of that landfill obligation in 13 years. And we're talking long-term funding strategies here.
And those funds don't have any restrictions after the landfill's closed?
I don't know. Where did they come from?
It was an assessment.
To assess, actually, the users.
Against the garbage.
It's part of the Thompson's cost.
So
they have to put some of it.
One would ask if those have some strings attached to them. I think at some point.
The thing is that the landfill right now is just a big old empty hillside with manholes and effluent mines and a lift station. There's probably some level of restoration that will need to take place on that landfill when we're done, which would be part of the solid waste consortium. So I would think that some of those dollars would be used for whatever stabilization would take place, because it can't be just left status quo.
Yeah.
Some physical improvement needs to take place there. Shoot, you can make it into a mini golf course if you wanted to, but I think that the city would retain some sort of ownership on it, and some sort of stabilization process would need to take place.
So, Derek, when you come back to us with that proposal, is there a way that you could go through these and maybe identify the short-term funding instead of, you know, maybe kind of prioritize it, get rid of some of the long-term? I mean, urban renewal is kind of, we know that's a long process.
Well, I don't think we want to get rid of the long-term.
I'm not saying get rid of it, but I would like to see a list that is something that's doable within maybe a year, maybe 2 years.
At least
you could
make an L and an S by
then. Or something.
So I think when we get to the point of making recommendations in a couple meetings, what we probably would like, Derek, is we've got all the information.
Let's
start kind of putting things in kind of categories, whether it's what we need to spend money on or the kind of revenue we want to utilize for that, and just like what Tia does, start matching stuff up. Seeing what works.
And costs associated with them. I mean, a lot of these loan programs or borrowing programs, we kind of at least have some kind of an idea what the cost is.
The last one on here is metered parking, and that's a conversation to pick up, particularly in the Bayfront and Nine Beach areas, and that would replace the existing economic improvement district structure we have down there. But there is some potential to generate a reasonable amount of money through metered parking to offset costs for resurfacing parking areas and the Nine Beach turnaround and things of that nature, which are not currently being funded in that manner. So it would be some additional funds to deal with some of the infrastructure needs we have in those specific districts.
Yeah, the parking lots are
kind of a ballpark number on that, and of course buying the equipment is not cheap either.
No, we can.
There's a guy in Portland who can help you with that.
Yeah. I read about that. For a long time.
Parking lots are a specific.
That was a lot of front-page stuff.
Parking lots are a challenge because they're kind of the black sheep of infrastructure. They don't fall neatly within any particular division that I have. And so I sometimes have parks maintenance guys working on something. I sometimes have streets guys, but there's no funding source that helps us pay for parking lots. And the city owns a lot of parking lots.
Yeah.
A lot of them are coming up to the point where they need to be resurfaced. The Nye Beach turnaround is one. It could be funded through. It's the Nye Beach turnaround is specifically a tourist-related function, and it could be funded through room tax, but the room tax really doesn't have the ability to support something at that level.
Well, if there were certain districts you were considering, that would definitely require a very public process, especially around the neighborhoods.
Most definitely it's going to require.
I mean, this is just being thrown out as something to think about. There's no plans to implement it anytime soon.
See, a lot of these parking lots were constructed through the urban renewal districts, I believe. Ninth and Herbert, wasn't that Northside urban renewal at one point?
Yeah, a lot of urban renewal resources
are floating out.
Yeah, and so they developed these parking lots, and there's no long-term funding strategy for maintaining a parking lot. It's a paved surface like any other.
We wanted Derek to brainstorm, so he's brainstorming for us right now.
I'll be clear too. I mean, metered parking with the kiosk, you know, modern kiosk is something a lot of jurisdictions do.
I'm saying it's an option that others jurisdictions are using, but we're just floating it out there for us to think about.
Sure.
Yeah. It would actually deal with things like people utilizing city lots for long-term fleet storage. I mean, we have a chronic issue with that.
Yeah. Did you have anything you want to add to this, Tim or Bob? Because this was a good. Thank you, Derek. This is really good. I think Patricia's point was well taken about categorizing this stuff at some point. Well,
before, it's past five. Any further comments for anyone?
Well, other than I still have that one question. You know, is there you know, a possibility? And I know Bob hasn't had a real good chance to. I know he's still digesting stuff, but I still want to know if there is that possibility to seek some type of an offset or funding for that 15% increase, water increase within the budget. I mean, I never really got a solid answer on that.
Okay, well, I can give. I
have a look into it.
I can give some comments on that.
I don't quite understand the question. Can you re-ask the question again?
Oh my God, are you serious?
Yeah, I don't know. What do you mean by offset?
Well, I wanted to know
okay,
if there
we're
was
talking about that 5% water utility surcharge.
And budget. I was asking that question. I never got an answer there, so then that's how this task force basically
you now.
Developed.
I'm following you.
I think when you look at that, you have to consider a policy that's set in place right now. And we just touched on it briefly at the start of Derek's presentation there on this potential funding source, is that I think the City Council has to take a look and address that policy that sets forth reserves and unappropriated ending fund balances. Now, if we take a look at what that requirement is pushing up that unappropriated fund balance to 20% by 2016. I have just given to me today, I got some preliminary June 30th ending fund balances. They're not rock solid yet, but so we're just using the word preliminary. Okay, now we consider that 5% in lieu of franchise fee. I mean, you could consider stepping that down and not taking the whole thing all at once. But whatever you consider moving out of the general fund, you have to look at what it does to everything else. Because if you take $377,000 out, that's what the water sewer portion in the 2014 budget is, then something has to give. There isn't going to be the revenue increases in that fund unless you increase the service provided to the other funds, which means those other funds have to provide more.
Right.
Or the transfers. Now, my opinion, and I can be absolutely 100% wrong, but I think that if that pool gets passed, that bond issue gets passed, that's going to increase the city's cost of more subsidies going from the general fund to support that larger facility. I just think that's going to happen.
Your old pool is not going to drop off the map either.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's an awful lot of issues out there that affect the results of the general fund. Then the other thing is that I think there has to be a better testing of the historical use of monies by departments in the general fund. Because let me give you an example based upon just the figures that preliminary figure of the general fund that I have here. It's $2.3 million ending June 30th. The beginning fund balance in this budget was based on $2.1 million. It's a $200 million. That's a $200,000 spread. That means that there are departments that are potentially over budgeted in the general fund. And historically then, you're going to have to take a look at those departments and see if they really in fact need all that money that every year they come in, ask for, and get it. So it's a complicated issue. And it just needs a better understanding of what's going on and a better presentation of data by your finance people.
That's funny because I was just thinking that sounds like half the cost of a fire engine that you just found.
Yeah, I knew you would bring that up.
But it's a Wienermobile fire engine.
While he brought it up, I got to throw this in. Sorry about that, Chief. The Chief gave Ted and I an equipment schedule that to replace his equipment over a period of time, he feels that he needs an annual allocation of $417,000 a year over...
But that was if we bought two fire engines right now.
Yeah, if.
And a couple other vehicles.
Yeah, and so what he's suggesting here is that he's still going to have his annual equipment requests in the budget, plus this money over here to be set aside in the reserve. Well, from a finance director standpoint, I don't see how you can do that. I don't see how you can handle that. There is no way that the city's general fund budget can handle that. And if you take $377,000 away, I mean, you could do that if you step it down to make it consistent with the incoming revenues, but something's got to give somewhere.
See, and I think we had this discussion. The large rolling stock purchasing seems to be something that would be logical to fund through a bond issue.
I said that in a council meeting a while back, that if we're really, truly feel that it's necessary to have these expensive rolling stock items like fire equipment. I'm not picking on the Chief here.
He just happens to be the really expensive rolling stock. I mean, it's really, that's the truth.
Public Works.
He's got what is an enormous amount of equipment costs. The best way to do that is to take that to the voters on a five-year local option levy and have the voters make the decision that they want to buy a $500,000 fire truck. Operational monies in a general fund cannot afford that. Mm-hmm. It's just not going, it just won't happen, and it can happen. I mean, even to set aside $100,000 a year, that takes 5 years to accumulate that. But what happens to the other stock that he wants in the between time? The police chief is in the same boat. He's turning over at least two vehicles every year. He may have, by the time you get the vehicle and all the equipment on that, you've got $45,000 per vehicle invested in that. Mm-hmm. You're talking about $90,000 at the minimum for two vehicles every year. I don't know whether he needs that or not. Does every particular police officer need a vehicle? Those are policy questions that somebody ought to start asking and determining whether all the vehicles that we have that we're purchasing every single year are actually needed.
So, Bob, I think what we did was we asked for you and the department heads at a couple of meetings ago to sit down and go through the rolling stock funding issue and perhaps come back to the council with some recommendations in the future.
I think you just heard it. It's five.
Well, I'm talking about the council would probably want to hear this as part of more of a formal presentation. I mean, we're getting a preview, but I think this is something to count on.
If you pick up a big ticket item within your general operating fund, I mean, that's it there.
Yes.
People have to understand that if they don't pick that ticket up and they don't pass the bond, then they get a resulting reduction in service.
Yes.
There is no free lunch.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
There's no misunderstanding on a five-year option levy. If you do it $500,000 a year, you're talking about $2.5 million worth of equipment.
So Mark had a couple comments.
Well, one was we talked a little bit about the reserve policy last meeting, and it was stated and it's apparent that the reserve policy is not being followed right now. So it definitely needs to be take a good hard look at it at the city council level. And the second part of that is no offense to Bob and to Ted, but this city right now is operating on interim directors. Until you get a city manager in here and you support that city manager, and that city manager has a chance to hire an economic financial director and get the proper staff back in here and give them a chance to really get their feet on the ground, you're going to hear a different story from those people. And you need to rely on those folks somehow at that point. And so I wouldn't get too far down the road in taking on some of these detailed recommendations until you get people in here that you're supposed to be working with, and they're going to work for you and work with you, and they're going to have a different perspective on things, and that you can just expect that.
One of the things so we do have
you
to
got
watch.
I mean, you got the groundwork and started everything to hand to them and say, here's our problem.
I don't disagree with that, but we got to have a package give to the budget committee in December.
I just want to say one thing. I do appreciate, Bob, your honesty.
Yes,
because obviously you have no dog in this fight. And I'm hearing things that we have never heard before. And I have been I have asked many questions at budget and have never gotten an answer. So I do appreciate the time that you've put forward to this.
So we're not done yet. Nyla, did you want to public comment? You want to add something for the record? Okay. You're on.
This last discussion that just took place right now was very pertinent to what I'm interested in. I watch the police cars cruising around town, and I think, man, we got Batmobiles in this town. We have some of the most expensive cars in this town driving around that belong to the police. And I think about this idea of $159 a month base rate water bill at my house in 3 more years, and I am stunned. And I'm going to keep saying that out loud every chance I get, because the public doesn't seem to get what's going on here. And I don't understand why we can't come up with a bond or some sort of financing method to change this equation, because I do not believe that $159 a month for a basic water rate is reasonable. We will have some of the highest rates in the state of Oregon. And I know you guys are getting sick of hearing me say this, but I'm going to say it every chance I get. I'm sorry that the newspaper isn't here today to cover it and have a show up in the paper.
Just left.
Well, so anyways.
Oh, really?
That was the guy from the News Times. So, that's part of what we're trying to do. And Mark, just in response to your comment, I agree. We do want a new city manager involved in this. And hopefully, when this group makes this recommendation to be presented to the council the first meeting in January, for the council to consider it, we'll have a new city manager there listening to it along with the new finance director. And at that point, they can consult with Ted and perhaps Bob as far as your thoughts, and then take it from there. So we have to utilize what we have right now, but we are looking to the future, and we definitely want to make sure the new city manager is involved every step of the way with these recommendations. So, I mean, that's clear across the board as far as staff and the council. So, but that it's an important point to note. But I think we're hopefully going to make that happen. In any event, the next meeting I have for the next topic, options for a restructuring approach to services. That's what we had on our list at the first meeting. Does that? And then the next one was options for a restructuring approach to funding.
That's kind of what we were just talking about.
We were talking about the new funding sources. Now we were talking about, as part of our recommendations moving forward, now that we know what the current funding sources are, the future funding potential sources, the current infrastructure, the future projection infrastructure, as part of our recommendation, do we just want to dive in and go, okay, we have the information in front of us. Are there things we can restructure or consider changing as part of our recommendation in moving forward? I mean, I'm just throwing it open. That seems to be a general theme we were hoping to achieve at some point.
I think that's a valid discussion to have, because I think that there are lots of cities that provide the services that we're talking about providing in other fashion.
So,
by privatization or by a smaller nonprofit board that runs the sewer and water outside of the city.
Yeah, so
there's a whole bunch of different mechanisms that are done out there.
Do we want to combine the both?
You could take to the voters a fire district.
right? Well, there's fire districts, water, there's district. Water and sewer districts that are separate from city financing.
So that was our next step.
There was one other thing that you had on your funding thing that I know we had mentioned before, and that was refinancing existing debt. I know that we had talked about that, but we didn't talk about it today. And I don't even know if that's an option, but I know that was done in prior times. And I don't know if that is still on the table to do that now that we have this great bond rating and everything else going on.
I have to pursue that on some of the issues yet. I don't think there's going to be too much flexibility there.
Okay.
But we'll find out.
Ross. I didn't look at that North Fire Station.
So when's our next meeting?
Well, our next meeting...
31st,
right? No, it's the... No.
Yeah, the
31st. We're going to make sure.
Really?
It's...
Just the same.
Yeah, 31st. And then two meetings in November. So the 31st, do we want to just focus on options for restructuring services or combine that with restructuring funding so we can make it a package discussion?
Will you be able to have your stuff by then?
Services will drive funding anyway.
Yeah, I'll have some. I mean, yeah, getting them in the baskets isn't too hard. I can do that. Certainly.
We'll just make it an open-ended general discussion around those two themes and see what staff wants to
You're
go.
You're not off the hook yet.
I guess finally.
It could be a brainstorming discussion. It can be more brainstorming as part of the recommendation process. I mean, this is pretty old. We're getting into the kind of more open-ended process. We kind of have the information in front of us over these past five meetings. Now the question is, what do we do with the information in coming forward with some concrete recommendations that would provide some value to the council? That's really our goal. Are in our task.
The only thing I was going to say is restructuring services is a very different conversation than the funding. And so, yes. If we're going to be able to bring you meaningful information about options for restructuring services, that's going to take a fair amount of time in itself.
Okay, so we have
that was part of the
next
meeting.
Original things.
And in the end, that sort of drives the funding discussion.
Right. Exactly.
If you decide to combine the fire department with public works, it's going to affect the budget.
We have four meetings left.
Yeah.
So I think at least one to one and a half of those meetings needs to be formulating the recommendations. So we need at least, we've got two to two and a half meetings worth
two
of
meetings.
Two meetings
left, to, left to, do
to,
this.
To do this stuff. And then really we have to reserve those final two meetings for recommendations.
Is Patricia still going to bring a report on what other towns are doing?
Yes, for water rates and what? Yes, and how they're financing them.
Okay, so
maybe stick to this.
So next meeting, restructuring services. The meeting following that, restructure funding approaches for restructuring funding, and then the final two meetings, putting all together with the recommendation.
They have to have more than that many meetings.
We got four more meetings left.
We have four more.
I'm saying we may have to have a couple.
We might, or we might just have to go to five on every meeting from this point.
We'll just have to see how the holidays and everything.
We're 5:30 right now.
Well,
canceled.
This is over now.
You're on overtime.
I'm assuming, folks, we're probably just considering probably having to go until five for the next four meetings. I mean, it's 5:30 already, but 4:30 is probably going to be a little too short for the next four meetings. Is that working everyone's schedule at least for the next four meetings?
Start earlier. Start earlier
or go later? We'll go 3 to 5 next meeting. And we're adjourned.
You did.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tia.
Thank you, David.